Hello, everybody. Welcome to 321 No Kidding. Bobby the Awesome here. And today I have someone with me, and I'm going to introduce her both ways, because when you buy your book, after you hear this, you're going to be looking for Kathy. But I have Kat with us today, as I will call her, and it's Kat Son?
Son.
Son. Kat Son. Ooh, that's fun. Welcome to the show, Kat.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Bobby. It's good to be here.
Well, as I told you before I hit record, the floor is going to be yours. You're talking about a topic that I've heard on the periphery of my research and the different experts that I've had, but I've never had anybody go deep on this. So I am looking forward to you educating me and my audience. So the floor is yours.
Thank you. So I'd like to say a couple words about myself, and then so you'll understand my experience with the work, why I'm talking about the work. When the work was actually created by my late husband, David Williamson. So the work that I did for the biggest part of my life was working for the Department of Defense, and I retired in 2020 after 36 years doing that kind of work. I met David in 1994 on the 4th of July. You know, we used to talk about, well, there's been fireworks ever since. And at the time, a lot of his clients had been saying, you know, you ought to write a book. And so I was new to the work as well. I didn't know anything about it. But I'm really good. I've been sort of a natural editor. And so I said, hey, don't try to pull ideas apart. Just get it all out, stream of consciousness. And he took me up on that, because it was a lot to sort out. But it was a wonderful journey. And of course, as I got to know David, and then got married after about 3 years, and I was working with the material part-time, again, because I was working full-time, I really got to understand the work. And then I experienced it myself, and really how powerful it is. So to understand the body memory process, it's important to first talk about pretty much the problems that it addresses. So when we are very, very young, we have, by the time we are 7 years old, we've largely decided how I am, how they are, and how life is. So anyone who has read Biology of Belief, or maybe they've heard Bruce Lipton talk, because he's out there a lot talking on YouTube, and really tries to get people to understand that, you know, from the womb up until about 7 years old, we are forming our core beliefs. He talks about it as almost like a state of hypnosis, because children are in a brain state of theta, which is imagination. And, you know, he says when we're born, you know, we're, some of this, again, happens in the womb, and we can get into that. But, we're kind of clean slates. I mean, there's the operating system, you know, if you will, but, you know, we need to put in the programs. And he talks about how we, we observe the world around us. And so that's, you know, that whole idea of creating beliefs is one of the three real major underpinnings of the work that David that created by pulling all of this together. And he says, you know, I didn't create all of it. I pulled things together in such a way to create something that was new. Basically, it's something that's bigger than the sum of the parts. And it also has a solution to it, which again, we'll talk about later. A second major underpinning of the work is the mind-body connection. Just, you know, amazing. If anyone has heard of Dr. Candace Pert, she wrote Molecules of Emotion. And she found, she was researching with colleagues back in the late 70s, for the opiate receptor. She figured that, you know, there ought to be, you know, if pharmaceuticals are effective, there ought to be some reason in the body why they are. And they did identify this opiate receptor. And the reason why we have that is because endorphins are sort of natural, as I think a lot of people have heard about the runner's high, and, you know, we have this sort of natural fit. And so that really changed things a lot. And she is credited with credited with actually proving the mind-body connection that people had talked about for thousands of years. Traditional Chinese medicine, Ayurveda, all kind of built upon the fact that there is this mind-body connection. And now here a scientist came along, was really kind of turned things on its ear. But again, very powerful stuff. And then, oh, and then to add to that, so it wasn't just about the opiate receptor. When in follow-on research, they learned that there are receptors all over the body for neuropeptides and, and that hormones are, that's all of it's just kind of everywhere. Things that we thought were just brain are not. And things can be, emotions can be coded in the body. I think there's a lot of work coming out, like the emotion code. That's really picking up popularity because trauma is a big thing, and everybody is really trying to figure out, what to do. And so there's the trapped energy from emotions. But then when we talk about this work, we will see there's another piece that this work brings. The third major underpinning is that babies and children are very conscious, and over the, I guess, the last 20 or 30 years, there's been researchers who have been uncovering just how connected the baby is to mom in the womb, and that trauma can occur as early as there's people who talk about it as conception, and David found it in the work as he started working with clients that. Clients who had the decision, we'll talk about vows in a few minutes, but this vow about I am an accident actually have said that they've been accident prone in their lives. I mean, and this is how these beliefs kind of like show up. So, about beliefs around conception if you're not wanted. So, when mom finds out she's pregnant, she's either very happy about it. Or probably a little upset or concerned. I mean, there's a range there, but it's very emotional. I think we'd all kind of admit it's a very emotional time. So it really is ripe for all the emotions to be running and for this to impact, the new being that comes in. It's not so much a matter of everybody really understands every sort of, specific way it happens. It's just that there's so much evidence. That you have to just say, somehow, this new being that comes in is this patterning already starts in the womb at that early. And then throughout, throughout the pregnancy, at birth, we can talk a little bit about vows that come from birth trauma. And then when we're very young and we're in that theta state, up until about 7 years old, is when we're forming these four beliefs. So, David pulled this together and into what he called the body memory process as really a two-pronged approach to helping people discover what is it that they decided back when they were, in that age group. And then there's a sort of a homework process to be able to make the change to release that. And it's really the homework is really based upon the same mechanism, if you will, that allows us to create in the first place. So he used to say, the bad news is that you created it. The good news is you created it, which means that, you can create something new. But the bit about the body memory process, and this is one of the things that makes it different, is that many people think that you can just sort of say affirmations and make a change. And I'm not, and for some people, that may work right away. But for others, it might be a struggle because there's a lot of brain chatter that goes on. And the fact that if I can say I'm a powerful woman all day long, but if I have a vow that says I am a failure, and there's lots of reasons why, that can be put into place in those early years, then there's going to be a difficulty there. And so the body memory process homework is about
Kat,
emptying
I
the
want to
cup.
interrupt real quick because you're going to go
Sure.
down and you're going to go deep. And I just want to recap your introduction, if that's all right. Because you said a lot of really good things, and I have a couple questions, and
Sure.
I want to be in alignment with you. So you said that your husband put together these three concepts that led us to the body memory process. So beliefs, the mind and body connection, and then baby and children having consciousness up to 7 years old. So those are like the tripod around it based on other people's research and his and marrying it, correct? All right, good. And then am I understanding that this is almost, I don't know if I wrote down spirituality, but I don't feel like that's the right word. Is it science? I'm curious about, is that what I'm hearing? Like science and spirituality kind of connecting?
Yeah, I think that that's a good way to put it. It's set up in a way that it can be more, if someone is not so spiritual, that they can still do the work, because it's not, I would say that it's very, very powerful to be spiritual and understand that, we're on a journey, we're all learning, and it's easier to understand how and why this happens, how we sort of attract into our lives what we need in order to learn on that bigger spiritual journey that we're on. That's
Okay.
the way that it makes sense to David and me. We're very spiritual, and so that's the way it makes sense to us. But if you wanted to just think about it more scientifically, you can do that as well and go right to the real basics about that have been proven, and there's books written by people with doctor in their name all over the place, talking about this. I wanted to say one more thing about David. He had a near-death experience when he was 14 years old. He had double staph pneumonia, and they didn't have a cure for it. And he came back knowing that he had a mission, and I think that it came forth for him sort of naturally out of the fact that doctors were telling him that he was never going to be truly healthy. His lungs were never going to be truly, the way they should be, because from the disease, his cilia didn't work right, those little hairs in your lungs that keep things moving. And he didn't like that. And he was like, no, and he proved them wrong time and again. Every time he said that, no, your life expectancy is this, he would go beyond it. And he kind of stepped out of college into the human potential movement. It was around the time of the 80s. A lot of this stuff was coming out about how powerful that we truly can be in the way we think and how we create our reality. So it really kind of naturally flowed out of his personal quest for wellness, which I think is part of the reason why it's so powerful, is because he had a very strong motivation to discover, what does it mean to be truly well.
That
And
makes
he started
sense.
working with clients in the early 80s. And so it's been, well over 30 years. And then I can talk in a little bit about, when you're ready for me to talk about the body map that has come out of his working with clients.
It blows me away that there was any inkling of this stuff in the last 30 years. Like I keep going through that thought process of, has this stuff always been here and I just didn't notice because I was too wrapped up in addiction? Or is it new? So I love that it keeps showing up that it's been around a minute. The last interruption I'm gonna have, and then I'm gonna let you go again because there's so much in here to unpack. Can you just define trauma through the lens of you and David? Like, what are you calling trauma for the audience, just so that we're on the same page with that?
I would say that, so if we say we'd look, just look at birth, because it might be easier to understand birth trauma, because it can be, people can, a lot of people have had experience with, well, difficult birth, or they knew that, there was a cord wrapped around the neck, right, or something, like that. But it doesn't need to be, that dramatic, that there is something going out where there are emotions running, and the baby or the small child is a very emotional being. They are, if you've ever heard a child talk about, always and never and everything, it's just very, very dramatic. They're very ripe for creating these beliefs about, I am, or I won't, I will, the wording that comes out, and I can talk talk about some of these vows, some of the wording, you know, it's just it's very strong, very powerful. Just that comes out some decision I'm going to make about, again, about how I am, about, you know, the world. Say life is a struggle is one that comes out, and sometimes that can come from mom, maybe having a difficulty with pregnancy, or you know, somebody's not happy about the fact that she's pregnancy. I mean, a lot of things that can, you know, it's going to contribute to this idea. Or it's what David called a family jewel. It's something that gets passed on from generation to generation about how some difficulties, you know, about life. You would ask that if you're ready for me to talk about the money one. This sort of might naturally flow here because it just occurred to me.
Go for it. Yep, I'm done with my
So,
interruptions for a minute here.
yeah, so we've all heard of, you know, money is the root of all evil. And a lot of times, you know, you hear that growing up, or it's difficult, you know, it's hard to raise money, or there's lack, a lot of conversation about lack around it. If a child asks for something and, you know, they're told, well, we can't afford it. You know, where there's it's and that, to answer your question about the trauma, that's traumatic in the sense that that child then has that belief kind of bestowed upon them, and they're not in a point of choice that they could be, perhaps if they didn't have these preconceived ideas. And then they could go into, you know, adulthood and maybe more easily kind of go get into the idea that money is a flow, which really is what it should be. Money is energy, right? It's meant to be a flow. It comes, it goes. You know, the idea that now, because of this conversation around me growing up, I'm experiencing lack too. It just sort of plays itself out because I either hold on to money too tightly, or I don't like it and I spend it as quickly as I can, and I end up with, you know, without it. And so I guess that's the trauma, and it shows up in very a lot of different forms. If you're ready, I can talk about some of the trauma associated with the conditions that make people ripe for addiction, and if you're ready for me to talk about that. That might
Yeah,
make
I'm so sorry I derailed you. You were leading us into, I think, maybe a definition of what body memory process was, and you said something about the map. So you know in your head how the puzzle pieces fit together. So you just go ahead and I'll just take some notes and hit you up later.
Okay, but it's not, everybody's gonna understand. I am not a linear thinker, so so I might be over here and then I'm like over there because, like, wow, that's an important piece as well. But to, you know, again, just make sure everybody's clear, kind of summarize what I've said so far. We from the earliest time of that, you know, in the womb, all the way up until pretty much 7 years old, you know, we are this sort of clean slate, I guess, that we are ripe for this emotional content through which we make these decisions about how I am, how others are, and how life is. And then the body memory process is to get, there's a process for getting to that, to identifying, you know, what are the decisions I made based upon basically what's going on with my body and other sort of, you know, subjective and objective data. And then there's the homework process to be able to release that, which I can talk about it, you know, at whatever point you'd like me to. So that sort of summarizes the body memory process.
Okay. What just occurred to me is I've been very rough around the edges, like saying that one of the biggest beliefs I have in my recovery now is that we can almost cure addiction, and that's a strong word, but we don't have to be, like, I think that the chance of relapse goes on more if we don't take care of the past. So all of those beliefs and what happened from seven on that formed this thinking. And I've gotten there mentally, but I think you're going to share with us like calling them vows, and the way you're saying it is much more gentler than the way I've been approaching it. And I think you're going to give us another strategy. I think that's what the body memory process is about, is this other strategy to do that healing. And I really like thinking of it that way. So when you say vows, and again, I've read a little about you and have an understanding, but vows is almost the equivalent of like our beliefs into action. Is that what you mean by vows?
Yes, yes, absolutely. So I've sometimes used beliefs interchangeably just because sometimes it's difficult for people to understand, what I mean by vow. I would say a vow is a strong belief, but yes, there's actually a very is a an there's an action component to it. And I have a sheet in front of me here that I'm going to look at because it's one of the things that I teach when I do webinars. That I call vow creation patterns, and there's wording of them that's very, very powerful, and it kind of gives you an idea of how it plays out in your life. So I can't, right? I can't get enough. That's one of the ones that shows up with addiction. I can't get enough. It makes one feel powerless when what I can't presents itself. I won't takes away choice, but it might be in there. I won't, do something, or I will again takes away choice, because it's the whole idea, that the vow is in there and that I'm not able to make choice. It's sort of running me. I'll give an example, and sometimes people say, well, that would be a good vow to have is I will always be happy. And that can actually, be in there. In someone is like, I'll always be happy. But what about when we're not, right? When it's time to mourn, we all have things that happen in life where it's actually healthy to not be happy, in that moment, because we need to sort of grieve and let that process happen. Another thing I want to put in here is that, we think of trauma as a negative thing. With the child, it's they're trying to figure out how to be in life. They're trying to figure out how to get love and how to get their needs met. And I'll give you an example. Say I'm about 3 years old. It's hard to get my dad's attention. I have it at this moment. I'm sitting on his knee and we're having a great time. And he looks at me and he says, "You'll always be my good little girl." And I'm like, got it. So it's an emotional time. It's happy. So it's not traumatic, really, in a sense. And so we say a lot of times these are formed through trauma, and a lot of times they are. But I think that really underneath all of this, if you were really to distill it, it's about that emotion. I think if everyone starts looking at what's out there, like the emotion code, what Candace Pert discovered about emotions is that's sort of like the I see it as sort of like the next frontier for humanity. I think we need to really get a handle on what it means, the importance of getting a handle on our own emotions, and that's a key to our healing, and I think a key to our really sort of progressing, as you are moving forward, is being able to deal with that. Because if you look at a lot of the problems that are really widespread, it's a lot of it's due to, just unexplored emotions that are stuffed. So I think that that's really kind of the key. And again, not necessarily because of something that was bad. It could be a happy, good experience. Mom says, you're always happy, you're always such a happy baby. And then so I'm thinking, yep, that's the way mom likes me to be, so that's it, I'll always be happy. That's sort of like the way that these vows are worded. And we have a collection of about almost 1,000 after working with clients all of these years. And a lot of them are, they're not just all unique, a lot of them are just pretty common. that people end up with as because of some of the things we've talked about already, like the conversation around money, the conversation around at home, about just how we learn to be in relationship. So say we have a parent that rages, and I'm thinking that's the way, one parent thinks that's the way they have to get your attention. So all of a sudden their voice goes up, and then I'm gonna learn that. I'm gonna learn that as a behavior, and a lot of it just comes about because we are modeling, what was around us.
So how do you fix it using this body memory process? Like, tell me, let's pretend I was your client and I came to you with, I'm not worthy. Is that a vow?
Oh, yes.
Okay. So I'm not worthy, which is why I like this is I'm going to make it up a little, but it kind of is maybe partially true. I'm not worthy, so I'm not capable of having money. So I should blow my money at the casino because I don't know what it's like to save money, right? Like that's as
Yes.
real of an example as I could get for 3, 2, 1.
Oh, yes.
So can you talk us through like what that might look like in your process or how to use your process to come up with the better vow or belief?
Absolutely. So identifying that I'm not worthy, I mean, you may, I have you as a client, and it may come up in conversation kind of early because the work to discover these vows is largely interactive, right? So I have a course now where people can actually, because I need to, scale it. I can't clone, myself. I'd love to be able to sit on one with everybody to make this discovery. But there's a way to walk through, okay, what's going on in my life or whatever, to what's how I'm feeling in my body to discover these vows. But say we came to that vow, and usually there's more. A lot of times it's not just one, right? So either you've come to me and you're like, I know I have this in my head all the time, or we've been able to uncover it together. So there is a th David called it emptying the cup, physically, mentally, and spiritually. And that's from the old story of the master, teach me everything I know. And the master's pouring the cup of tea, and the cup overflows, and he says, but master, my cup is full. And he says, yes, so is your mind. I can't teach you anything, right? That you can't, they say you can't go into something thinking that you can't go into a class, even though you've had a similar class. If you go in thinking you already know everything, you might learn a little bit more, but you're not going to learn as much as if you came in and said, okay, talk to me like I know nothing about this. Like you do that. You have to, like, I know nothing about this, because I want to be able to learn it from the bottom up. And so the work for emptying the physical cup is what David named disavowals. So if we have a vow that says I'm not worthy, then what I'm going to do is give you homework that you are going to say, I disavow I'm not worthy. And we'll try it in a session. And I'll say, how does that feel? And a lot of times people will say that they can actually feel the energy. They can feel the movement. Like if it's showing up a certain way in a, in an elbow or something, like it's lodged, because it's like with the emotion code, there is energy associated with it. There's a blockage a lot of times, and they will actually feel, or I have to, here's one, I have to do it all myself. That's a very common one. And that's, you had mentioned about what are the clues in our body where we carry pain and tension? Low back. A lot of times that's where we're carrying, so many people with low back pain, and we think we have to do it ourselves. Or I heard somebody recently say it, and I kind of cringed with, well, if it's going to be done right, I'd have to do it myself,
It's
And so,
frustrating in this nowadays. I keep trying to congratulate my friends and my people when they do ask for help. I tell them I'm proud of them and I'm glad that they'll ask for help instead of all the bad things that can happen when you don't and you bury them. Or just giving us the gift of being able to help someone and have our own happy feelings. So.
Absolutely. Being able to receive as well as give is important. It's important spiritually, and it's something I've struggled with. I'm all, I can give until the cows come home, but don't try to do anything for me. Oh, no, I got it.
Yep, I
So
can see
yes,
that.
I've had my share of low back pain. But it's going to be, if I thought, I was thinking of one earlier to be able to explain this. If I have a vow, I am a failure, I'm not going to fix it by thinking I am a success. Now it's going to have, that's going to have some, and we'll talk about the third part of the homework, which is affirmations. It has its role doing an affirmation, but that's kind of like, that's really about after you've already emptied the cup. Because you're trying to put something in that's already full. This, you got to remember, it's about cellular memories. What Dr. Pert discovered, that we have this all happening in our body, and the body is an information system. It's not a chemical. They used to think it's all about chemical. It's an information system. And if you've got that information already in there, you need to be able to let it go. And so it came in as, which one are we working on? I've named a few. Say I'm not worthy. So if it came in with I'm not worthy, I disavow I'm not worthy. You're actually, and it's got, you say that with the emotion, because you're an adult now, right? You're not the child that made that up. So I have a book I'm writing now called You Made It Up, Now Stop Believing It, right? So we made it up. It's time to stop believing. It's not serving you as an adult. So feel that, get that emotion behind it. I disavow I'm not worthy. You're going to do that 3 times a day for 90 days. How long does it take to change a habit, right? So this is about retraining the cell memory. That's the physical cup. The spiritual work is about forgiveness. No surprise there, right?
Yes.
So powerful, so powerful. And in the course of this discovery work, you probably have some sort of an idea of who maybe to forgive around that. So maybe I got this message, even though it may, like, because remember, communication, we all learned about communication right in school. You receive something, but you may not receive it the way that it was intended. And so, like, David teaches that we used to teach people, when you're teaching something, you kind of test, especially with kids, you kind of test to see, now what did you hear me say, right? And so you want them to give it back to you, maybe even in their own words is fine, but to check for how that went in. But a lot of times as parents, we don't, kind of almost start going on automatic, but if we start thinking, oh, I remember when my mom said this to me. But which is just kind of run, because it's all, a lot of emotions around, and before we know it, we're saying something that the child is hearing, and then they've got their own idea, like just what that means, and it's all going on in there that we're not even aware of how they're filing that away, and it's not even, it may have nothing to do with what they heard. And the way that it would, that piece of communication was intended. And that's not what matters. Like, but that's not what they meant. It doesn't matter. What matters is what the child heard and how they filed that away as the vow, that belief, that is going to be there when they're an adult, still running, still working behind the scenes to limit their life.
Wow. So you're forgiving the person who said the thing you interpreted, or are you forgiving yourself for not interpreting it the right way?
Well, when someone gets a list of who to forgive, a lot of times it's not necessarily who's the one who put this vow in me necessarily. Like, there's a recommended list of forgiveness, like the birth team, because there are things that are said at the birth that that can get picked up energetically. Again, the child is pre-verbal, so yeah, it's not like I know consciously that you just said there's nothing special about this one, and that was one that actually showed up with a client. There's nothing special about this one, meaning nothing to worry about. It's a textbook delivery. And the as in the, like this client had that as a vow that showed up, and the way that it showed up for them was they didn't think they were anything special. I mean, they always believed that they were just common. They never thought that they were going to do anything really all that great with their life. And it showed up with what they attracted in their life, and then they were like sort of unsatisfied with it until they discovered that was a lot of times when people are going through the body memory process, they're asked to talk with family members. Mom can have a lot of information that she doesn't even know is important. Like, oh, I didn't even know that was going to be important to you. Yeah, sure, this is what happened and this is what they said, but wow, that's impacting your life now, and it can be a real learning process for the client and their family members when a lot of this just starts coming to light. So to answer your question, the forgiveness a lot of times is, this mom and dad, right? Mom, dad, they're the ones who were there from the very beginning. Again, doing the best that they could, very lovingly saying whatever they said. We had one client that had, and this happened more than once, that it showed up as juvenile onset diabetes because they were called, sweetie so much by a parent. Like that actually sort of came out, and we've, recorded it that was the reason, was because of, sweetie, honey. It happened to a boy because mom wanted a girl, and I don't know, that's the way it showed up. And yeah, it's very it's just very powerful. And it's gonna be different. It might not show up that way for one person, but for the next, that's way the way that it shows. And so it can be pain, tension, and even, disease that these vows can show up in people's lives.
You said you had some personal experience with this.
Oh yes.
Do you want to chat about that?
Sure, yeah, I'd be glad to. I used to tell David I was his poster child.
You were the po oh, his
Was
poster
his poster
child.
child because I had so much work. I had a birth mom and I had an adoptive mom. So, I just got, kind of double the work to do. But I was actually adopted and didn't realize it until I was in my 30s, and that's sort of its own story. But my adoptive parents adopted all three of us, me and my two siblings, from different families. They, again, interesting that magical age of 7 when children are supposed to be able to get abstract ideas. Had me read a book called The Chosen Baby, and I didn't think it was about me. I thought it was a great story, and I would read it over and over. I still remember the book. But anyway, it made a lot more sense to me when it finally came out, when I was in my 30s. I had a birth mom who was very distraught, I think probably very young, and she tried to do a home abortion when she was in her 6 month of gestation. We think that there was probably a raging grandfather, and like there was somebody in her space who was just traumatizing her. And then, of course, it was very toxic, for me. And it was probably just as well that, things ended up the way they did. But this is an interesting way that all this stuff started showing up in my life. When I was very young, I still remember I was sitting in the doctor's office. The doctor had asked me a question, and I didn't answer. I didn't want to answer. I was afraid to answer. And over the years, I started realizing that I just didn't really want to talk in front of the groups. Now, the doctor wasn't a group, but once this came out when I was an adult and I did the body memory process, and it all came to light of why I got so incredibly nervous about talking in front of a group. I mean, I would just almost pass out. It was so bad. I know that people have the fear of talking in front of groups. It's a common thing. They say it's more common than the fear of death. But this was really particularly bad for me. And what what came to light was that I was in an incubator, and it was 1961. And there were a lot of medical people that probably did not think that I was going to make it. And I perceived that either, and again, either they were saying out loud, they were thinking it on some energetic level. I perceived that. And we uncovered a vial that I had. They watch me to see when I'm going to die. The guy was like, ah, they don't think I'm going to make it. And so the way it played out for me is every time I got in front of a group, I was in that life and death situation, and I was very much felt like I was being judged, and like I was gonna die. Now, how do you die on stage, right? You kind of goof up, you slip up, you forget what you're supposed to say, you leave your notes over there. That's sort of metaphorically, but this shows up a lot of times where something has a death, like because kids, again, are very dramatic, and things a lot of times are in term of black and white, up and down. It's very dualistic, life, death, and so you can kind of get how, oh, being in front of a group is going to be, no wonder I was so nervous, and no wonder I was so nervous talking to a doctor wearing a white lab coat, wearing, I'm sure that all those people in the NICU or whatever they called it back in 1961 were wearing, this, but they were wearing white coats. So yeah, that was the way that that really showed up for me. Now, I'd like to talk for a minute, if it's okay, about the body map, because it's a very, very powerful tool that after working, over 30 years with clients, David started noticing a pattern. And he was very good at, taking notes and being able to, kind of see this fall out. So the body in the body map, the right side of the body is about the masculine issues tend to present in the right side, feminine on the left. The front of the body is about how I relate to the world, and the back of the body about how the world relates to me. If your listeners might be aware of the chakra system that comes from, I guess, Ayurveda, a lot of the Eastern thought systems, the body has this chakra system, seven chakras, from root, at sort of the base of our spine, creative, going on up, creative. Solar plexus is about, personal power. The heart is its own chakra. Communication at the throat. Intuition is like your third eye, if you ever heard of that, right? In the forehead. And then there's a crown, is a spiritual chakra. And so there's a body map that we have, that we've mapped those almost 1,000 vows to where they show up as pain or tension in the body. And this is one way that people are able to fairly quickly just kind of zoom in on what's going on for them. Like, this is what's going on. This is like the set of vows that have showed up whenever this happened for other people. And it's pretty powerful. So, having explained the body map at least briefly, I'd like to give an example of how another one of my issues that kind of showed up in my body. I always carried this kind of tension and pain in that scapula area, left side of my body. So, feminine issue, something about how a powerful woman was relating to me because it was in my back. And it was almost directly in between heart chakra and throat chakra. And decoded, it's how a powerful woman in my life was expressing love to me. Well, son of a gun, if it wasn't my adoptive mother, who was very, very controlling, very, very much protective of me, but it came across as very controlling. She wanted to be in the middle of everything, wanted to be involved in every decision, even when I was well into my 30s. And I didn't like that. And so I carried it in my back. I had this pain in my back, and I didn't realize until I did the work on it that that's what it was. Did the work, and I was able to release the energy and release the decision there, and I was able to move on. Just like I wouldn't be able to be here talking to you if I hadn't done that work on myself with that They watch me to see when I'm going to die, because I mean I couldn't get in, I couldn't talk in front of a camera. I wouldn't have been able to talk in front of anybody, but maybe one on one I was okay. But even then, sometimes I didn't say a lot. But over the years and into college and beyond, I started to very much come out of myself. But still, even when I was working for the government, I became a manager. I needed to stand in front of groups of my own employees. I was just terrified until I did the work. It was amazing the change to empty that, again, the disavowals to empty the physical cup, the spiritual work, and I think I mentioned the mental cup, and that's that affirmation work that I talked about a moment ago. Again, that's not just trying to kind of jam in, I am a powerful woman, because what happens a lot of times when we try to make a really positive statement about ourselves, our brain likes to throw up all the reasons why we're not, right? It's like, oh, no, but what about that time? And what about this time? And it's like this, this voice. And so the affirmation part of the homework is about getting all that brain chatter out. Right, using paper, using the a pencil, just getting it down, and it will work itself out. I mean, there's a point where it's kind of like, well, you already said that, right? You already said that. Oh, no, that's not true either. And just having that, what we resist, we make stronger. I think a lot of people have heard that before, and I think they've experienced it. This is about not resisting. This work is about embracing, what's happened. Okay, this is what's come up. That's all, it's all okay. It's very much being gentle with yourself, being loving, being able to acknowledge this is what's going on, and then okay, it's time to let that go. Let's get that out of there. Empty the mental cup as well. And then you can work with the affirmations. And when you don't have the chatter coming up about the affirmation, then you can truly do the affirmations the way that they're intended to be able to then put in what we want as an adult and not be living any longer by what the child put into.
Well, I have to say, Kat, I'm grateful that you got past, that you did the work and that you're speaking to us. That's the very first thing I want to say. I find this so fascinating because I'm starting, as you're talking and sharing your experience, I'm thinking about the people that I know have the most pains or aches or surgeries or things, which opens up this whole other mindset about how we can recover, whether it's physically or mentally or spiritually or all those things. And then I'm also in my head chuckling. And maybe I picked up this belief. Maybe I knew about that story that you told about the teacup. But when I talk to my audience about self-care and taking care of themselves and being prepared so that you don't relapse, I always describe it as this bucket in my chest. And you have to scoop out the negative in order to keep the positive. And you have to dig deep at those bottom 3 inches and scoop all that nasty stuff out. And that's like your reserve that prepares you in the worst of the worst so that you don't relapse. Like you need to have. And it's filled through, good podcasts or exercise or whatever. Like that's just my the way I've come to believe it and share it. So as you're talking about these cups, thank you for being in alignment. And I wonder if I stole some version of this from that teacher or not, but it just works to simplify it because sometimes this stuff is heavy and it's a lot. Like you're talking about all these books, doctors wrote them. It wasn't Bobby the floral lady that wrote them, right? Or Kat the Fed. It's doctors and people putting a lot of effort in that.
Yes.
I have one question, and I don't know if it's relative to your work specifically, but you referenced a lot of things that I've looked at bits and pieces, and I have my minuscule understanding. I haven't gone depth deep, but what is your feeling on? So there's a belief, and you mentioned the word emotion a lot of time. And then we talk about this stuff being thoughts, and the thoughts and beliefs are almost the same thing in current. I was curious if you could, if you have a perspective on the difference between a thought and an emotion, which one's more legitimate, if that's the right language around it. Do you get what I'm trying
Oh,
to ask
yeah.
you here?
Yeah.
So can you elaborate on
And
that?
there is a lot of confusion around it. There's the thought, belief, emotion, all those are kind of sometimes used interchangeably, and in like one definition is not going to be saying the same as the other. I think Dr. Candace Pert is the one who can probably answer that best. And I think she used to lecture about the fact that because of the mind-body relationship is that it's kind of can come from either, like an emotion can arise from the body, or it can be in the brain. I mean, it's like it can be thought provoked, and then there's like that the body will actually have a lot of times a reaction, before there's thought, and so it's not that one is more legitimate or better. I mean, I think that it's all, involved in this, in creating this belief system. I guess it's really about all of it. I think because there's no barrier between the mind and the body. I think David used to talk about making a distinction between feeling and emotion, because a lot of people will talk about, I'm feeling rage. Well, there's the feeling of how your heart starts racing, and there's the actual body experience of rage, but then there's the emotion which actually carries along the history. And I think that that's the part that we're trying to get to in order to really change behavior. And to be able to to rid ourselves of this baggage that we've carried into adulthood, because maybe we had a parent who raged, or we build on experience. That's why I tell people, if you don't believe that children can make this up when they're in the womb or at conception, a lot of people are like, I don't know, okay, it's okay, because we tend to reinforce beliefs, and so if it first occurred in the womb, at that point in our lives, we have that belief and we act it out, and then we kind of reinforce it and see I was right, kind of thing, and then it reinforces itself. So what it doesn't really matter when it first happened, whether it happened in the womb or it happened when you were 5 years old. What's important is the fact that, okay, it happened, and it created this result in your life. And that, it's time to make that change, because, if you want something better for your life, it's important to address it, so that you can create something new.
That's a perfect tie-in to my last question. This was so interesting. I kind of went a little over, so hopefully everybody hung in there with us. But you mentioned a course that you have, and what would be a symptom, or what, how would people know they need to, and it maybe the course is the best way to start learning about this and start doing the work. Or maybe talk about that, but what would be a symptom? Would my addiction alone be a symptom to go try to do this course and start looking at what my belief system is? Is it the pain in the body? Like
Yeah.
what are my listeners feeling right now that make it so that they should be looking at you up?
It really is. Okay, so, and this is the way, because I've listened to Bruce Lipton talk about this, and because he talks he does a some he teaches people how to kind of get back into sort of that hypnosis state that they were in when they were a child. That's how you kind of get, it's kind of like how our approach is about, getting to the wording of the vow, and then sort of like, disavowing. He talks about, well, get back to that state of that state of hypnosis. So he said the what he says is, what's in your life, right? So do you like what's in your life? Because if you like everything that's in your life and you're perfectly happy with it, Every single thing, your health, your relationships, your finances, your career, all those kind of self-help areas. If you're happy with all of it, then good to go, right? So you then you're one of the lucky ones that had everything wired in so that your life is playing out very successfully for you. Most of us either have a gee, there's a whole bunch of stuff I'd like to change, or there's maybe some things that you would like. There's nothing really, really bad, but there's something here. When people would seek out this work, a lot of times they were in some type of crisis. We tend as human beings to, as long as we're okay, we're getting by because we're busy, right? There's stuff to do every day, and you might think to yourself, I really ought to do something about this, or I ought to see if there, because this is, but it's maybe not so painful. It's not so much of a big issue in our life that is creating those pain points that we're like, oh no, like there's a rock in my shoe and I got to get it out now because I know I'm rubbing the skin off. If it's not like that, it's then okay, well maybe I'll do it tomorrow because I'm busy. I got to go to work. I come home and bring this sort of a routine from day to day. So I would say taking a I would tell your listeners to just kind of take a look at, do a little inventory. What is there anything in your life that you think that you'd like to do differently? Then it's time to take a look then at yourself, right? Yes, whether it's the body memory process or anything else, there's a lot of great self-help stuff out there. I recommend this because people have told us that it's like a laser beam as opposed to the flashlight of psychotherapy. Because people who have said that they've been in therapy for years and they had a 3-hour session of body memory process and they were able to zero right in at those underlying causes, right? We all know from medicine you can't fix the problem if you don't know the underlying cause. So I tell if anybody has never really done any introspection before and done anything that's self-help, whatever you feel comfortable with, take your baby steps. It's all good. It's all good. You do it at your own pace, and life will let you know. It'll start amping things up. Once you start looking, it's amazing how all of a sudden it'll just be illuminated, and you'll go, "Yep, that's really something I need to work on." And then I recommend doing something that's going to be kind of get you to that underlying cause, like the body memory process, and then give you something that you could do about it. Because I think sometimes there's stuff out there that they're like, this is what's going on, but it doesn't really give you this nice step-by-step process to say, here's what's going to create the change that you want.
Love it. So, Miss Kat, where can people find you?
So I have a website, bodymemoryprocess.com. So it's all one word, bodymemoryprocess.com. And if you have any questions, I'd love to hear from you. Info@bodymemoryprocess.com. Send me an email, ask a question. On the website, you can see there's a free ebook that you can download. You can get a free 20-minute consultation with me. There's all links on there that you can find that. So more than
Awesome.
happy to talk to anybody. I love this work. Again, I think I don't know if I mentioned that I lost David. If I mentioned to David as my late husband, that yes, I lost him in 2019. But I this is really sort of like a I feel like it's a mission because it's so very powerful. We created that body map. I have client case studies that demonstrate how people's lives have changed by doing this work, and the world needs it really does need this work. So I'd love to talk about it and help anyone who is interested.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for being here, Kat. We will get all that information in the show notes too. So thanks again.
Thank you.